This is episode 6 of the Futures Intelligent Leadership Flowcast with Sonia Rasula and Dr. Claire Nelson. Welcome to the Futures Intelligent Leadership Flowcast. This is your host, Tyler Mongan. I am the president of Haku Global. This is a space for globally minded experts to dialogue about the future of leadership with a focus on the key question, how can leadership be more intelligent about futures? From this conversation, innovative wisdom, practical tools, and actionable insights emerge to help future-ready leaders thrive in an uncertain, complex, and exponentially changing world. Let's jump in to the dialogue. Aloha and welcome to this episode of the Futures Intelligent Leadership Flowcast. My guests are Sonia Rasula and Dr. Claire Nelson. Sonia is the founder of Unique Markets. This is an innovative, modern pop-up marketplace for small business owners. It's taken place around the United States, such as Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York City, and Austin. Fashion mogul Elaine Fisher named Sonia one of 30 women entrepreneurs changing the world. And Los Angeles Magazine awarded her one of 10 of Los Angeles's most inspiring women. I first met Sonia while speaking at an event that she ran called Unique Camp, where small business owners spend 4 days in digital detox while exploring their creativity, business, and connection. Claire is the chief ideation leader at the Futures Forum, a strategic foresight and sustainability engineering consultancy, and the founder and president of the Institute of Caribbean Studies. She's also a keynote speaker talking about the future, human rights, and human flourishing. I met Claire while presenting at the World Futures Society Federation Conference in Mexico in 2019. Today's episode highlights the importance of shared vision and how small individual actions can align with a larger vision. But it also reveals the challenges of connection and confidence that individuals experience while taking these actions. Leaders can be examples and inspire others to take small steps and see how their action is important both locally and globally. I'm reminded of my time working with the nonprofit Kanu Hawaii. The mission of Kanu Hawaii is to empower people to build more environmentally sustainable, compassionate, and resilient communities rooted in personal commitments to change. What this looks like in practice is people make small commitments formulated into I will statements. For example, I will eat more locally grown food. I will connect with my neighbors. I will ride my bike to work. I will bring my bag to the market. Then Kanu Hawaii would track these small commitments to change and calculate the larger impact when thousands of people took the small actions together. Kanu Hawaii and this dialogue is a simple reminder that futures build inertia and momentum through small decisions and daily human actions. When humans have a shared vision of the future and take actions collectively, that future is more likely to emerge. So thank you, Claire and Sonia, for joining me on the Future Intelligent Leadership Flowcast. And as always, I'd like to start with this key question of what does it mean for a leader to be intelligent or smart about the future given uncertainty, complexity, and exponential change? And I want to invite you to both to address that question from your own perspective, whether it be through the work you do or the personal challenges that you face. And I want to start with Sonia.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me today. I think kind of all revolves around vulnerability and a willingness to be vulnerable, because I think especially with a world that's rapidly changing in many ways, but especially with communication and technology, I feel like a good leader has to be willing to be vulnerable and has to be willing to tap into that side of themselves. It's impossible for each of us to know everything and to be strong and kind of all-knowing at all times. And I think the more and more managers and leaders step up and show their vulnerability and that, you know, the future is unclear, I actually think that's a strength, and that is something that will greatly aid leaders in inspiring people, engaging them, and getting what they need from people and teams, for me, particularly with teams and employees.
Great, thanks. And Claire, what is your thoughts on that initial question?
Thanks, Tala, for asking a question about leadership and the future. I have spent most of my career in an organization that is really about changing the future. Is about helping countries, nations, and communities to shape the future they want. And so a lot of what I spend my time doing is really trying to convince people that they need to be more intentional about how they think about the control they have over the future, to the extent that there is any control, but more importantly, that using the future to help make decisions or to help create a clearer vision or to help avoid dangers and risk means being willing to totally embrace the fact that you can never predict the future and that the future is uncertain. But to the extent that all of us are actors in making choices, we all, in fact, use the future to make those choices, whether it is to go to schools to study or to buy healthcare insurance at a personal level, or for your company to use forecasts to try and figure out what your competitive intelligence ought to be. We use the future in some ways. But what is required of us in this particular time in human history, when we are at what some people, including myself, are calling a real danger zone of self-destruction or imploding as a society because of previously bad choices, is that leaders of organizations, small and large and in between, have been much more conscious of the future as something that we are continually co-creating. So even though we do not, quote unquote, can't predict the outcome, we have to be more intentional about having foresight in how we make choices about the ways we're living our lives as humans on this very frail planet. And so for me, I think that the future has to become a much more conscious space in which we agree to spend some time thinking about the future we want and helping to do a better job of shaping that.
Sonia, with your work, how are you thinking about the future? Because I know, like we talked about the vulnerability and that it is unclear, but still you're leading your organization. And so what are you doing to think about the future and try to gain some more clarity about it and actually consciously co-create it?
So for me, I mean, my main business is organizing events that help designers, artists, and other small businesses. And so I have a very, very small team, which is easy and great in many ways compared to my old world of working in the corporate world where there's like 1,000 people to sign off on things. So I have a lot of autonomy and control over my future, which is fantastic. For me, I loved what you just said, Claire, about intention. I really love that. For me, I'm realizing my role here in this world, in this universe, more and more as I get older. I'm in my 40s now, just throwing that out there. And I think that I am here to leave a legacy, and everything that I do now when I'm making decisions day to day or month to month, or looking at the big picture and looking at what's the work that we do 3 years from now and in 5 years from now, I'm very, very conscious now about the impact, the positive impact that I can have on my community and other communities. And I think that is something that is really important to me. I'm very passionate about, but I'm starting to realize more and more, you know, I wish more people would realize their role, and if they are leaders or have any sort of voice or following, I wish more people would realize that it's less about making money. And in my opinion, it's more about having a positive impact and leaving a legacy. And for me, that's that's trying to teach as many people out there how to be more successful and happy in business, which is not just about work, but about work and life together.
So it's this idea too of to have that long-term vision, right? As opposed to thinking short-term of, I think, you know, trying to chase money is more that short-term focus, but thinking 3 to 5 years out and even longer really helps you to put that focus on, like you said, legacy and impact.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, really what my business is we create pop-up marketplaces, very much about commerce and money and items and products. But it's a much bigger picture for me now. And I'm realizing that instead of just being a so-called shopping event, really, I'm here to help other people understand how to be better at what they do, how to be more successful. And again, really for me, success isn't tied to money. It's really tied to creating a life that you want to live. So how can I help these small business owners be more conscious of everything that's out there? And again, just, you know, having more of a positive impact within their communities, instead of just looking at what they're doing as a singular me and my family and my small immediate community, trying to inspire each of the people that I come in contact with to then do more what I do, which is take a step back, look at how you can impact a greater community and try to work toward that.
Great. And Claire, with your work, how are you helping leaders and communities see more into the future, look at legacy and look at impact?
I have like two or three different lives that I live in. I'm a true Jamaican in that regard. So I'm going to talk about my community development life because that's sort of my volunteer passion. And most recently, one of the things I've been trying to do since I started this organization 26 years ago was really help diaspora Caribbean people see themselves as agents of change, first of all. And secondly of all, moving from this idea of I'm going to give charity by giving my high school some school books and suggesting to them that they think more long-term about what it is they're trying to accomplish when you give school books, who's going to actually, you know, code them in the library, or who is going to make sure they're replaced when they're old or updated. So moving from this like one-off gifting, which is nice, or to a more longer-term investment, development investment. More recently, with the, I guess, rising tide of inequality around the developing world, whether it's Africa, the Caribbean, and Latin America, places in which I have interest, the rising tide of inequality and youth unemployment and also disasters, quite frankly. We find a lot of like hand-wringing, if you will, like what are we going to do now? This is when we think we're getting off our feet, we're hit back down. So I'm trying to have leaders in the organization critically work, especially with communities that have gone through some kind of trauma, to think about the future that they can create together. And that really using this idea of an aspirational shared vision, that despite the various, let's say, separate ideas that people want to have. So I'm really a sports person, or you are a health person, or I'm a gender person, you are an environmental person, but all six of you are living in the same town, right? But if all six of you actually sat and had a conversation and said, at the end of the day, what does a successful town look like? Right? And even if you're going to argue and bitch about what that might look like, if you come to some, like, say, 3 points of agreement that based on what you all want to see happen, if in the next 10 years you all hold that vision together of this thriving, flourishing thing you want to create, I am of the opinion, and this is what I do, I'm of the opinion that if people hold that vision and they continue to do what they're doing, even imperfectly, working by themselves, even if necessary, because that's just the way we are, right? They will be more likely to get to that preferred aspirational state because they've taken the time to sit down, listen to each other's points of view, thrash out what they don't agree with, agree to disagree, but agree on, at the end of the day, we all want this particular vision to be the outcome of our work. And in that vision, all three of us are doing very well, thank you, at doing what we're doing. And so for me, it's about helping leaders at all levels. So that could be for me now an industry association. It could be a community association. It could be a neighborhood. It could be a government. I don't really care. I feel so strongly about the fact that we all have to be a crew on Spaceship Earth that I feel strongly that we really have to do our part, each of us, to make this happen. And so I spend a lot of time in that space trying to convince people to listen to my point of view.
Over to Sonia, how do you help your teams and even your clients create a shared vision?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, I mean, one of the things that I did this year was I started a podcast. which is an easy, you know, very democratic, free, like it's so interesting. The technology is out there now for anyone to have a voice and to impart, you know, what they want to with their community. And it's been really great. And so that's one thing, I think, like continually trying to look at whether it's new technologies or new services or new ways to connect with people. I think that I'm always looking out for how can I connect with more people and help them. I think with my community of small business owners and people who are trying to, some of them don't even refer to themselves as small business owners because they actually don't think that they are. They don't think like that they're there yet, but you know, everyone is, whether they are a freelancer or a side hustler or whatever it is that they're trying to do. Maybe a better word is dreamers, you know, dreamers and risk takers. Whatever it is that they connect with, though, I think my goal is to continually find new ways to connect, reach, and cultivate not just the community, but cultivate conversation within the community. And really now I'm trying to be more of a teacher. I've always been like a born leader, but I think now I'm starting to understand that role for me is transitioning a little bit. And I believe teacher is something that I'm starting to really discover. So I think it's teaching more people to take on leadership skills themselves and see themselves as, yes, you are a business owner. Yes, you are a leader in your community. Yes, you can do this. You can empower people. You don't just have to be inspired by others. You can be the inspiration in your community. So I think and that's what I'm really trying to focus on now and I'm excited about.
That's great. It's like that idea we were going back to where they have, you know, the power to shape their own future. And you can, yeah, you know, inspire them and teach them how to do that.
Absolutely.
And Claire, what are your thoughts on that? Going back to this idea again of how do we help people like tangibly co-create?
That's actually, that is really a real practice that I'm engaged in. One of the things I have done in my life is led the campaign to have the U.S. Congress declare and the president back in 2006 declare June as National Care About American Heritage Month. And out of that, I have mentored many people to start in organizations around the country and, help them identify their points of power and the points of passion, first of all. What is it that you want to do? Because I mean, it's volunteer work, so what is going to pay them? So when you're calling, you say, well, I want to help. I always say, well, helping is always a problem because if people want to help, but they're not really passionate about it. Mm-hmm. Eventually quit on you and you end up doing the work anyway, so what's the point? So I always try and identify, help them identify what's your passion, what makes you angry, what keeps you up at night, what would you do if you weren't paid to do it, and like you want to help, but what do you want to accomplish? And if you can help people find that, you tend to get a better volunteer, first of all. People who may not necessarily have seen themselves as community leaders or might have seen themselves as one but didn't know how to do it, if you give them a future to point towards, and that future could change, like, you know, in a month or in 6 months or a year, but you have to start them pointing off in some direction, right? For me personally, I'm very focused on global agendas, and I'm very focused on the year 2030 and the global sustainable development goals. So my current, like I would say, passion project is trying to get everybody to find something in their life that's relevant to the global development goals. And I think, as I like to tell people, you might have all these goals being global, but global makes up some 7.5 billion one of us. So each of us have to make the global. So in fact, the goals are also local and the goals are also personal. So my current passion is to try and get people to see themselves as part of the change toward this paradigm shift that enough of us humans have to do for us to make it over the safety line.
It kind of sounds like this, I think Sonia and Claire, both of the kind of things you're sharing, it's around this idea, I don't know if this is true for you or not, but this idea that it's a shift from like my story, you know, it's my world and my story, into more this kind of global story, a bigger picture, and how the role that we play has an impact or a part of that bigger story, right? Even though what I do might seem really small or very localized, but it is part of something bigger. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I was going to say, for me, that's certainly true. I mean, at the end of the day, let's take, if you're living, like I'm in Indiana at present at Purdue, right? Which is a big school, right? 30-something thousand students. I went here and I'm talking to undergraduate students about the future they want, and I'm having them share about food security. And what was exciting in this class that I did yesterday was the fact that most of them probably had never thought about themselves as being part of a food security movement, right? But I invited them to look at the work that they were doing in their personal passions and see how their work had any impact at all on food security. And amazing enough, a lot of people could find some relation. It may not be a direct line, it could be like a three-order line to get there, could find some way in which their current work or their current interest relates to food security. And so then it's different now when they now go back and decide to do a project or a report or a research paper. They might be a little bit more intentional about that choice and say, hey, you know, I really realize I'm concerned about this. So I think if we can wake up a few more people to this idea that we have a shared responsibility to our shared vision of a flourishing future, and the future that's flourishing has to be shared. It's not like all of us are gonna have, or 10% of us must have a good life, or in this case, 1% must have a good life, and 99.9% must be suffering. That's not gonna be a very flourishing future, because we're gonna have more people be behind, like, quote unquote, houses with grills and bars and gated communities, right? So nobody, that's not really a flourishing future. So how can we do better for more people is kind of where I want people to get to and feel comfortable with that.
Sonia, what are your thoughts on that movement of from my story to like this bigger story?
Yeah, I mean, we constantly say at Unique Markets, we're always saying it's we, not me. And I think that's a very important story for people to understand, as, you know, especially the younger generations. A lot of the people that I deal with and who follow us, and, you know, they're on the young side of the millennial generation. And it's very interesting because they have grown up in ways that, you know, the three of us can't really imagine or relate to. They've grown up with media constantly around 24/7, which is a really interesting I can't even imagine. And so a lot of them, while they are on board with inspirational quotes and they're on board with these ideals, a lot of people that we work with, again, it still comes down to them not having the confidence to understand that no, they do have the power. Every single person out there in this world has the power to make change, create change, and inspire change. And so it's really, you know, saying it over and over again, it's we, not me, and you are a leader, you are important, you are powerful. And it's very similar to, like, in American politics, at least, you know, trying to get people to understand local voting. You know, people vote for the president, but they don't vote for all of the smaller elections. And so I know that, you know, political organizations are continually trying to convince people and make people understand their power. Every single one of us has a voice. And so, you know, that's what we're trying to do as well. But yeah, that all of that aligns perfectly with the work that we do.
So it's like not only seeing that the big picture has an influence on the small picture, but the small picture, the local picture has an influence on the bigger picture as well.
Oh, definitely. I mean, at the end of the day, right, people, this is why they will have like a plastic problem. Everybody says like, it's just one bottle, you know, but then if a million people are just saying it's just one bottle, then we have a million bottles in the dump that we don't need to have. So when we get more into this one planet thinking, which is like, at first it sounded very like, you know, oh, it's just a fairy tale idea kind of thing. But now that we're looking at it and really seeing that everything is connected in some way to everything else in terms of the ecosystem we live in, water, food, at the end of the day, none of us can live without air, right? So if we pollute the air with chlorocarbons, for example, then none of us are gonna be able to have a good life without walking with a mask on our face. Is that what we really want? So locally that matters, because then if you're in a place where a pollutant is doing that, but then you work there, how do you balance these issues, and how do you convince the leaders of the plant or the leaders of the politicians to force the plant to clean up their air, for example? So this is why local voting, for example, is important, because you live locally. You don't live, you know, you don't live in Washington. You don't live in the capital country. There's lots of people around the rest of each country that we're from. So we need to have that relationship between local leaders and national leaders. We also need to have what I'm calling transnational dialogues between, or transsectoral dialogue between the different isms, you know, or the different anti-isms, because it's, everybody's an anti-ism of some kind, right, or a pro-ism of some kind. But you hardly ever see them cross-fertilizing their passion or their protest movement. So, you know, we have all these several movements protesting against something, but then, end of the day, we don't have a shared vision of what this collective shared harmony or shared prosperity could look like. And so we have to have people who use the future to sort of help people see that shared prosperity. It's not like the gender movement versus the LGBTQ movement versus the pro-life movement versus the anti-abortion movement versus the women's right to choose movement versus the racial justice movement, and like never the twain shall meet. But most of us are like five of these things. Like, I have a running joke with my friends that I'm going to run for 6 parties and see which one will take me, you know? I'm a leader candidate since I have 6 personality types in one body. So, but you know, you kind of have to unify them into some whole and say, okay, what's the best balance we can have as a people, and how do leaders cross boundaries and borders and biases to create a kind of, again, the shared vision we want for our common flourishing future.
And Sonia, so with your work, like the lack of confidence you're seeing in people, is it, do you feel like it's, there's an overwhelm by the big picture? They feel like they don't have an ability to make an impact or be part of that shared vision of the future? Or what do you think it is?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it would be smart to ask all the previous generations that same question, because I honestly think it's something that every generation has struggled with, the idea, you know, who am I in the universe? What's my role? And not feeling empowered. I do think that the younger generations are going to have, in some ways, a harder time with this, and then perhaps in many ways they're going to surprise us and me, because connecting in many ways is easier and faster for them. But I do believe that it's very easy to post an inspirational photo, to write an inspirational quote, to double tap something and like it, the step that's missing is the connecting for them. It's less about showing off and showing other people those things and actually taking action. And so that's, I think, kind of the work that has to be done and some of the work that we're doing, which is again, you know, I'm not sure why people don't feel empowered or aren't confident in themselves, but for whatever reason, somewhere along their lives, and, you know, maybe a lot of it goes down to like when we're babies or kids, or when you're taught that like it's not cool to raise your hand in the class, so you kind of then tend to stop raising your hand and stop speaking out. But at some point, I think all of us face this crisis, and too many people that I run into, you know, haven't had that positive reinforcement. I'm lucky I had great parents. I went to public school all my life, but had fantastic teachers and people around me in my life that were positive and encouraging. And so if it's part of my role to now do that for other people who may not have had those people in their lives, that's one form of my leadership and what I'm doing. And again, hopefully I instill that in people and then they take it on themselves and keep spreading it. But there's definitely, I'm seeing more and more a weird disconnect with publicly saying, I believe, you know, in this, that, or the other thing, but then taking action, putting action behind it. And so hopefully we can encourage more and more people to do that.
Yeah, let me add to that, because I think that I feel like I was a born leader. And I say that because as a child, I stuttered very badly, but I still managed to be in charge of things. College, I stuttered very badly, but I was the vice president of an organization, the Caribbean Student Association, and I told everybody what to do. And then when I became president, I still didn't speak in public, but people spoke on my behalf, and I told them what to say. So I'm kind of used to being the kind of person who was trouble with a capital T, opinionated, and comfortable with doing things. So maybe it's the way I was brought up in Jamaica at an all-girls high school where I was allowed to have my voice. So I had a workshop recently with some young people at Howard University, and they had all these great ideas. And then at the end of the day, when I said, okay, so now who is going to do what? Everybody was like, oh, we can't change anything. I was like, oh my God, I left kind of depressed. I'm like, oh my God, this is not good. This is not good. How come in a class of like 20 something kids in the room, I couldn't find one of them who would say, you know, I can do this. But I have to say that subsequent to that, we started a program of identifying leaders who are actually trying to do something, young leaders under 30. And so my spirits have been restored somewhat. I'm coming across some interesting young people who are actually doing stuff. They have opinions and they're actually starting organizations and trying to make changes. Some of them are into business, some are into social enterprise, some of them are just doing straight up, you know, quote unquote, nonprofit, try to work. But whatever it is, it's given me back a sense of, oh my God, thank God, you know, my future is safe. And more recently with the climate march with the children, I'm like kind of ecstatic about that. I'm like, thank God somebody's like getting them to be like obstreperous. We need some obstreperous young people right now to sort of help us through the hump. And so I'm not as miserable as I would have been, maybe like if you had asked me this question 2.5 years ago. Because I've seen some rays of hope. And the young people that I do have any contact with or any influence over, I do try to lend my emotional support or my spiritual support or my intellectual support where I can to help them, you know, continue to see themselves as being able despite the challenge. So I'd like to share my story about how I managed to do something with no funding or with only volunteer, you know, but at the end of the day, if this is what you're supposed to do and you know it in your belly, that's what you're supposed to do, then you gotta do it. You have to just find a way around the you know, the blocks and find a way under the bridge if necessary or over the mountain top, but you gotta just keep on moving forward.
It's interesting as you're talking. It's you know, the idea that with technology and the internet that we can see and hear about other people's visions or share, even see a shared vision of the future, and we can communicate and seemingly connect a lot faster and a lot more. But at the same time, we have this block about taking the action to actually create what we believe in, or to really connect with people, as opposed to just, like Sonia was saying, just clicking on something or giving a like, mm-hmm. but really connecting people is harder.
Exactly. And then feeling you have done something. You know, it's like hilarious. Like, because you've liked a picture doesn't mean that you've actually done anything. I mean, it's nice to like a picture. And maybe if you like a picture and a trend, then maybe the trend will do something. But usually it's not enough people liking a picture that, you know, is about something for it to really go viral. I mean, how many useful things really go viral? Let's think about that, you know?
Yep.
Mm. Things that go viral, either they're funny or they're stupid, you know? And so because we all like a good laugh, then we enjoy that. But we don't have enough, like, say, action, mm-hmm. actionable things to do that go viral. So it's still the same, you know, leaders of what is the climate movement or the gender movement or whatever, the same 30 people, I like to say, you know, trying to keep it going even though they're tired. It's because you're waiting on somebody to step up to the plate.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to wrap up here because we're running out of time, and want to end with just kind of hearing your thoughts, you know, again, after this conversation, kind of summarizing it all, and what are your kind of ending thoughts on what does it mean for a leader to be, you know, smart about the future? And also kind of speaking to this idea, it seems like there is this challenge around being able to take action to create that shared vision of the future, or even just taking action on your own future. And so if Sonia, if you could kind of answer that or speak to that question.
I think it's doing what you're doing right now and what the three of us are doing. It's conversation, and it's more action, less talk. But I think the thing that always gets people in and attracts people and gets them aligned with your vision is, you know, reaching them somehow. Obviously, emotional is usually the best way. I think it's just for people like us to keep doing the work that we're doing. And I really think it's trying to inspire people. So every single person that's listening to this right now, you know, evaluate in your life the work that you're doing, and then how can you also step it up a little bit so that you are sharing and empowering and inspiring people within your life to also take action, because it's a ripple effect. So if someone listening out there in a small town somewhere, you know, they have 10 friends, great. Invite them to a monthly meeting, start talking about issues, empower and inspire those 10 people in your life. And I guarantee you, they will then do the same thing for 10 people in theirs. And slowly but surely, we activate and we share resources, we share inspiration and tools. And I think that's really it. It's every single person listening needs to look in their toolbox. What are they good at? How can they create more of a legacy within their own life to then empower other people?
Great, thanks. And Claire?
Actually, Sonia said something that actually I was going to kind of say a variation of it. And this idea that one idea I've been playing with in my mind was, what if we were to actually start a movement around the sustainable development goals where, you invite, as you say, 10 people over or 9 people over, create a circle of 10 and have people just share something about their wishes for the year 2030 and how they see, you know, helping to create a flourishing future. And that were to happen, you know, in, you know, 300 homes or in 3,000 businesses or in 300,000 businesses, mm-hmm. that those conversation circles. And if every Friday night that was happening around the world, what would that mean? So that's my current, like, passion project. Like, how would I get that started? I have no idea. But I thought, well, maybe I should just start, you know, on the 30th of every month, you know, do something. And 30 people for 30 on the 30 days of every month or something. But just to find a way to encourage more people to not panic. Like, you know, it's like, yes, the future of work is in doubt. Yes, AI might take all our jobs. Yes, climate change might, you know, make many islands go underwater. Yes, they might put nuclear weapons in space. But I think the future is still brighter than we can imagine, because if enough of us believe in that, it will happen. So we just have to start sharing the positive stories that are happening. A lot of good things are happening. And sharing the stories and building what I call the mind field, M-I-N-D-F-I-E-L-D field, right? That allows the harvest of good, if you will, to be reaped by all.
Great. And final question, what is one word that you'd like to leave for the people listening today that that's related to, you know, what leaders need to embody in the future? Sonia?
One word.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with hope.
Great. And Claire?
Leaders should embody, I have to say the same word, hope.
Well, thank you, Sonia and Claire, for being on today. I really appreciate your time and energy.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us today on the Flowcast. To get a summary of today's dialogue, find out more about today's guests, listen to previous episodes, or discover more about Haku Global's neuroscience-based Futures Intelligent Leadership programs or customized strategic foresight and innovation sprints, visit us at www.haku.global. At Haku Global, we believe it is time for more Futures Intelligent Leadership. The future is something we need to think more intelligently and feel more deeply about so we can collaborate to discover today's solutions for future problems. If you are in a leadership role and need support or training to scale futures intelligence across your organization, then contact us at Haku Global. This is your host, Tyler Mongan, and until next time, have a preferred and conscious future. Aloha.